Saludos nuestra gente linda, and welcome to the 10th and last episode of 2015 of the Latina Theory, a Spanglish podcast sin vergüenzas. I'm your host, Ariana Genis, along with my co-host,
Maria Isa.
And we are two proud Minnesotanas, a Chicana and a Boricua. We are proud of where we come from and where we are now. We're here, as always, to create dialogue focused on Latina opinions regarding current events, health, politics, race, edutainment,
and a music playlist sazonado with Latino contemporary, Latino alternative, soul, hip-hop, reggae, reggaeton, cumbia, R&B, salsa, ritmos, afro-latinos, y más. You are now tuned into Latina Theory.
Hoy is a very special day, our 10th episode. We have a very incredible and special guest with us today, Verónica Méndez Moore. She's co-director of Centro de Trabajadores Unidos en Lucha, CETUL for short, which is a labor rights organization here in Minnesota that organizes primarily low-wage workers that are people of color and immigrants.
Welcome to our program, Verónica. Ariana, let's kick off with our first question for our guest.
Vero, I really wanted to ask you, you know, as someone who's also in the movement, you know, as an organizer, something that I've noticed and I know is like a common discussion is that, you know, the world of community organizing in Minnesota, especially in what's seen as labor organizing, is still predominantly led by white men. And I just want to hear about what that experience has been like for you.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there are a few notable exceptions to that, but it's generally true. And it has been a really difficult personal journey for me.
Yeah.
Because when I started out, I was surrounded by lots of big white men in meetings who I didn't feel comfortable talking about. I didn't feel comfortable sharing my opinions with them because I felt like I was going to get shut down. And the reality is I did get shut down. I didn't get listened to. They didn't know who I was. I hadn't done anything in their minds to prove myself to them that my voice mattered, right? And yeah. Like, you know, where they could walk in with not having proven anything and have a voice. But that was very much how I felt. And it's been a really long and difficult struggle for me because we, as CETUL, also engage a lot with like grassroots organizations that had like kind of less ego, I think, than a lot of the labor movement does, where I got to deal more with other Latinos. And it was good in terms of feeling like this is a space where I can like, where I feel like my voice is more accepted.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, a lot of the big labor unions have a lot of power.
Yeah.
And I would be doing a disservice to the people that I'm organizing.
Yeah.
If I was just like, I'm not going to deal with that powerful institution because I don't want to feel discriminated. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah.
To the workers. And so I have over the years struggled with myself to decide that I'm going to assert myself and to decide that I'm not going to be phased. And I think this is something a lot of people struggle with right now, is like people wanting to be in a space that feels safe, organizers wanting to be in a space that feels safe, surrounded by people, like particularly other people of color, like wanting to be around other people of color. Yeah. That they feel like, where they feel like they can, they aren't going to constantly have to fight that fight against racism.
Yeah.
And I think those spaces are important. But I think that if we, especially in Minnesota, if we are not able to hold hands with powerful white people and build together, like, we will not be successful. Like, I think it matters. I think we need it. And it's not going to be perfect. And there's going to be moments where we feel like demeaned and degraded in those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we're going to create a real movement that's going to be big enough to win the kinds of things that we want to win,
we need to educate.
Yeah. And we need to change those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And is it our responsibility as people of color to like go out and change white people? Like, no, it's not our responsibility.
Right.
But at the same time, like, if we want to build power, we have to figure out how to exist in those spaces and like take power in those spaces.
Mm. And I say even like educate too, it's just not even educate towards educating white people.
Right.
They tend to have that, let's have a diversity training, but they're teaching the diversity training.
Right.
So then
right.
It makes us feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And then we have to succumb consequences by us speaking on our opinions of what's right. How would you state, just want to throw this ballpark out there. If we have, you know, 8 Latino students who go on to working at 16 years old, who end up being the breadwinners in their familias legally, and they want a position to go ahead and confront a white superior, what would you do to you know, encourage them to speak up? Because a lot of times I work with youth, so my goal is to find those avenues of people like yourself that they can go ahead and feel that comfortability, because that's what you said, it's about being comfortable in your space. What would you advise them as far as speaking up and knowing, you know, the place and the power that they have?
I mean, I think, like, we need to, if we look at the world around us through a power lens and a power analysis of the world, like, it is the people that do the work that provide the wealth for the rich people. Like, we make them powerful by the work that we do. And, like, we need to remember that we have power in that system. And we need to come together collectively to take that power. And, like, people are scared, right? Like, you can say that to people. People are like, yeah, but I'm not going to risk losing my job. Like, forget that. Like, I'm just going to keep holding on to my little $9, right? And, like, that's real. But, I mean, the thing that I always say to people is, like, look, we live in a state where if the boss feels like firing you tomorrow because he doesn't like your eyeshadow, he can. If he wants to fire you because, like, he doesn't like how you walk, he doesn't like, you know, he thinks you're ugly, like, he can fire you. And so what do you really have to lose? You could lose your job tomorrow for doing absolutely nothing wrong.
Right.
Or you can fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of a person, like, are you going to decide to be? Are you going to be a person who fights? Or are you, I mean, like, there's a saying that we heard from our brothers and sisters in Immokalee, Florida, where they say there's two kinds of people in the world. The people that leave a footprint on the world and the people that let the world leave a footprint on them. Who are you going to be?
That's real.
And I think that is at the heart of organizing. It's like, you get to choose. You get to choose if you fight. You don't get to choose if you win, but you get to choose if you fight.
And that's why she's our Guerrera of the Week.
Yes, exactly.
You are now tuned into the Latina Theory.
Puedo nutrirme escuchando esto, ¿sabes? Tú me estás escuchando, ¿ah? Ajá. 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 Faltarnos el respeto. Ajá.
Vamos a faltar tenemos el respeto.
Ajá, mira, yo quiero un hombre sin complejo, que tenga buenos reflejos, pa' ver cómo se hace viejo. Miro el horóscopo pa' ver qué me depara. Cuando me pongo perra, tú nada me para. Esta búsqueda de mi demonio me tiene con insomnio, como plaga.
Con picante como tica masala.
Ajá, yo soy más bien normalita, ok, una mijita rara. Llévame pa' la cueva de los pelos arrastrar, no me dejes ni hablar. Si tengo la oportunidad de agarrarte como quiero la presión.
¿La presión?
Se te va a disparar. Lo de no probar bocado es la prueba de que nada, de que nana se puede comparar con amá. Ay, papá, estoy haciendo lo posible cada vez que me proyecto.
Yo no tengo edad.
Soy como el amor, amo a morir en el intento, amo allá. Si tú quieres nos ponemos contentos. Al ratito fuerte,
al ratito lento.
Ay.
Me sabe mejor lo que no me das que lo que me das. Ay, papá, que lo que tú tienes pa' mí. Tengo que gritar, yo estoy en libertad. Vamos a ponernos a llorar.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo.
Oye, flaca, este sudaca quiere tener sexo con caca. Kinky, peludo, como Chewbacca. Quiere tener sexo, puerco, sucio, como de inodoro. Oríname en el pecho, te lo juro que yo te enamoro, mi tesoro.
Escúpeme en la boca
mientras me agarras las tetillas. Con solo verte las rodillas, yo me lubrico.
Ay, que la tienes muy pequeña, chico.
Pero eso lo sabes tú nada más y ahora todo Puerto Rico. Cuando lo hundo hasta lo más profundo, me vengo rápido como
él. Segundo.
Pero no te me pongas violenta, que este caballo representa y el primer polvo no cuenta. Por ahí va el burrito sabanero a marcarte pa' toda la vida como cicatriz de pandillero.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo. Vamos a hacerlo 7, 8, 9 veces. Te voy a sacar a pasear por la calle 13 pa' que veas los arbolitos y los pajaritos y que de una vez me chupes el pito. Yo te quiero decir cosas bonitas, mamita, pero no me sale. Es que yo fui criado por los animales sin modales. No me quiero poner romántico, pero si tengo que cruzar el Atlántico pa' darte pa' abajo, lo cruzo nadando, por el agua resbalando, mientras voy fumando. Mi amor, te voy a cantar una canción de cuna, pa' que rompa fuente, una laguna, pa' que le llegues a la luna, y cuando baje te preparo arroz con tuna.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo.
Vamos a faltarnos el respeto usando el alfabeto completo.
Me sabe mejor lo que no me da, lo que me da es papá, que lo que tú tienes para mí. Tengo que gritar, yo estoy en libertad. Vamos a ponernos a llorar. Me sabe mejor lo que no me da, lo que me da es papá, que lo que tú tienes para mí. Tengo que gritar, yo estoy en libertad. Vamos a ponernos a llorar.
Oye, anormal.
Bellaco.
Cabrona.
Desgraciado.
Estúpida.
Farfolla.
Gamberra.
Huevón.
Imbécil.
Pinetero.
Caca.
Tambrucio.
Mala.
Calle 13.
Mala.
Calle 13.
Mala, mala.
Calle 13.
Oye, jamás te crees.
Calle 13.
Mala.
Oye, mala.
Mala, mala. Calle 13. Mala.
Topa a ti, topa a ti.
Oye.
Is there any advice that you have for Latinas that are currently organizing or are interested in organizing that maybe you wish someone would have said to you? Because I think something else that is unique about you is that you were kind of a trailblazer, right? You've carved a way for people like us to continue the work.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the advice is like, make sure that you have, especially in Minnesota, make sure that you've got spaces where you can heal. And that you can have love, but don't expect the majority of your work to be that space. I just think that's real. And it's like, and it's hard to say and it's hard to hear, but it's real. Like we're going to have to be in uncomfortable spaces, surrounded by people that we don't necessarily feel comfortable with, surrounded by people that we maybe have tentative agreements with at the time being about this particular issue, but maybe tomorrow they're going to be mad at us for something, or we're going to be mad at them. Like, that's real. But like, if we're going to build power, like, I think we need to be willing to exist in that space while at the same time making sure that we've got our own spaces to.
Right on. Are there any other insights you want to share with Latinas who are interested in dedicating themselves to the movement, specifically here in the Twin Cities?
I am super like invested in there being more Latinas and women of color organizing, and I feel like you said, like, you know, that I'm a trailblazer, and like when I think about all of the things that I've learned over the last 12 years of being an organizer, and looking at the people around me who I had to look up to that were doing exciting work in the area that I am, like, it's all white men. Like, I have never had a Latina role model that I feel like in Minnesota that I feel like I can turn to. And I think that's really sad and really makes me angry, and also makes me feel like that's a space that I need to take up. And I need to be open to, I mean, and I am open to like investing in other Latina organizers and organizers of color that, that are trying to come up. I want to build with you.
You are now tuned into the Latina Theory.
Y otra cosita, y arriba, y arriba.
¡Arribita!
Ay, arriba, y arriba, y arriba iré. Yo no soy marinero, yo no soy marinero. Por ti seré, por ti seré, por ti seré.
Cuando canto la bamba, cuando canto la bamba, me siento solo porque sé que es el himno. Porque sé que es el himno veracruzano. Y arriba, y arriba. Ay, arriba, y arriba, y arriba iré. Yo no soy marinero, yo no soy marinero. Por ti seré, por ti seré, por ti seré.
Una vez que te dije, una vez que te dije que eras bonita, se te puso la cara, se te puso la cara coloradita. Y arriba, y arriba, ay, arriba, y arriba, y arriba, ya. Yo no soy marinero, yo no soy marinero, soy capitán, soy capitán, soy capitán.
En la bamba, señores, en la bamba, señores, la melodía que nos pone en el alma, que nos pone en el alma, luz y alegría. Arriba, y arriba, arriba, y arriba, y arriba, y arriba. Yo no soy marinero, yo no soy marinero. Aquí viene la bamba de Santa Cruz, una tierra muy vieja de Veracruz. Allá arriba, allá arriba, allá arriba, allá arriba iré. Yo no soy marinero, por ti seré, por ti seré, por ti seré.
Thank you.
You are now tuned into the Latina Theory.
And we're back. Aquí estamos con Verónica Méndez Moore. She was talking to us a little bit about what got her into community organizing. And now I want to hear a little bit about the Vero that, you know, is not always working.
Mm.
And on that track, word on the street is that you like your cervezas and drinks too.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wondering, what are your top five cervezas or drinks?
I'm definitely a bourbon drinker. And I love me some Woodford Reserve. Mm. It's delicious and smooth and vanilla and oaky flavors. And some Buffalo Trace. My husband is from Cincinnati, which is right next to Kentucky, mm. where bourbon is made. And so we went to the Bourbon Trail. They have like all of these different like places that you can go and get the tour. And it's like fast.
Sweet.
And it was dope. And then like all these delicious.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Do you have any specific breweries or bars around the cities that you enjoy going to? What's your cheers?
Yeah. it used to be Tracy's. Tracy's mm-hmm. is the spot. It's right down the street from Sethul. I always loved how it was like a mix of like working class folks from the neighborhood, a lot of East Africans,
mm-hmm.
and college students because it's near a college campus. Just like a big mix of people. And that was definitely my spot. And less of a bar goer now that I have a 5-month-old baby. But,
there you go.
But that's definitely the best part.
The bottle has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, so I think it'd be great to hear a little bit more about your role in Sethul and also the work that Sethul does.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm a co-director myself,
mm-hmm.
and another man, Merle Payne, are the co-directors. And we have been, we're at like 11 staff, I think, now, which is crazy because for the first 5 years, it was just me and Merle and 11 people. And so
wow.
stuff gets done even when I'm on maternity leave, and it grows and it builds and it's dope. But yeah, so the work that we do, I mean, as a worker center, our kind of role in the world is to breathe some new life into the labor movement that's been dying for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and look at new experimental models of organizing.
Yeah.
You know, the cards are mostly stacked against unions. Like, the laws have gotten worse for unions. The economy has shifted because bosses are figuring out how to outsmart unions, and they've got the money and the pull to do it. And so worker centers are like coming up to create like some new possible paths. And so a lot of the work that we've done in the last 8 years that we've been around is just experimenting with like different models, different ways, like see what works, and have found some things that work. And I'm really excited about our campaign organizing retail janitors that clean big box stores like Macy's,
mm-hmm.
and Best Buy and Target. And have had some real success with the workers that are cleaning at Target and are, you know,
I remember being at the Sethul event a few years ago.
Yeah, right, you were out there. We were on strike.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We did a concert out there.
And
yeah.
What led you really to broke. Get some wins with Target?
It was amazing. You guys, the way you organized that, it just showed the love of the people.
Thank you. I was
yeah.
really excited about that one, especially.
Shut it down.
And like, shutting it down and having you out there and I Self Divine out
yeah,
there. Like,
yeah.
It was incredible. In the like bringing together the community and making it not just about like strategery, but like about community and like love and lifting people up. And I think like what has led us to those victories is just a level of creativity and being able to like pivot like at a moment's notice to be able to just shift our strategies and having, I think our biggest strength is like how deeply we do leadership development with workers and that workers are actually running their campaigns and that they're like deeply engaged in the strategy and that's why we can pivot, because it's like if it was just like me and Merle calling the shots,
mm-hmm.
and being like, all right, workers, we're gonna go do this, they'd be like, what, like, why are we doing that? But it's workers that are deeply engaged at the center of it all, and I think that's one of the pieces that's led us to have the success.
And could you share just a little bit about what you won specifically with Target and like other specific wins that you've been able to gain with Save Tool?
Mm-hmm. So as a result of like our conversations with Target, Target is implementing a responsible contractor policy, which is it's a very technical thing, but ultimately what it means is that the contractors at Clean Target have to engage in a conversation with the union, with SEIU Local 26, to ensure that workers have a fair path to form a union and begin negotiating a contract where they will have higher wages and better benefits and all of those things. So it's like a complicated process of like all these different steps, but at the end of the day, like, it's about workers getting fair wages and working conditions, and we're on a path to that. And we've won a lot of concrete things along the way. Like, we were a big part of the fight to increase the minimum wage on a state level, which was incredible, not nearly enough, but it was a great step forward for a lot of workers that were making, you know, $8 an hour, $7.50 an hour. And we also won just, like, a lot of changes in the workplace around, like, how the companies are treating workers having, like, health and safety, like, issues be addressed where, like, one worker... It's like vacuum cleaner is so old that it would like spark every time he plugged it in, and like the cords are like all worn down and like started a fire. It's like, what? It's like, why are people working with this kind of equipment? And like, we've been able to win some stuff where like there's a lot more protection.
What
is that?
What are those?
Those are my chocolate.
So tell me, dear, what's it gonna be? Cause I got girls around the world who be loving me. So tell me, dear, what's it gonna be? Cause I got girls around the world who be loving me. Yeah, I got girls who be loving me. Yeah, I got girls around the world who be loving me. Yeah, I got girls who be loving me. Yeah, I got girls around the world who be loving me. I had to swerve on little mama, cause she out here with that llama. Alpaca on my armor, staying warm in any storm. A super chef with the snow captain, out here move it, make it happen. Drop the top on them like, oh god damn, what happened? Hair be going, curls be blowing, girls be going crazy, hun. See me in your city playing shows at the stadium. Songs be going up and down and turning smiles from your frown. I just wanna get you now, now. So tell me, dear, what's it gonna be? Cause I got girls around the world who be loving me. So tell me, dear, what's it gonna be? Cause I got girls around the world who be loving me.
Who be loving me? So tell me, dear, what's it gonna be?
You are now tuned into The Latina Theory.
This year, Veronica is a speaker at the White House Labor Summit, and last year she was awarded the Emerging Leader Award from Minnesotanos, a Latino Leadership and Heritage Celebration.
We also want to mention that Veronica Mendez-Moore is our Guerrera of the Week, so
yes,
we get to actually have our Guerrera of the Week present as part of our episode. So, like, once again, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. This is an honor. I really appreciate this.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
You know, I'm generally pretty humble about me and the work that I do. I know that we have an amazing team of people at CETUL. I know that we're doing some really, like, cutting-edge, like, work that is putting people of color and Latinos and immigrants specifically in the forefront of a movement that otherwise people were totally in the shadows of. And so I feel really good about that.
So tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
So I'm from Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Minneapolis. My parents are from Peru, and they came here 40 some years ago with my big brother, who was a baby at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And grew up here in Minneapolis. My mom was actually the co-founder of Teatro Latino de Minnesota, which mm-hmm. is a theater group that did plays on, like, Latino identity mm-hmm. and, like, the immigrant experience, migrant experience in Minnesota. So I kind of grew up in the world of, like, those politics.
Right on. And where'd you go to school at?
I went to South High. And then...
I didn't know you went to South.
Yeah. You're a tiger.
Yeah, I'm a tiger. Everybody is doing something interesting, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But is it my circle? Like, went to South.
What were some of the hobbies, you know, growing up as a Peruana sotana?
I mean, nobody knew what a Peruana was.
Yeah.
People knew what Mexicans were.
I feel you. I'm Puerto Rican. We had, like, that same vibe.
And people, no idea what Peru was, had never heard of it. And there weren't even that many like Mexicanos at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was like black and white and like some native and me, you know, and so people didn't quite know how to understand me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just I was a tomboy. I kind of didn't worry about anything. I played a lot of sports and I played football, played like football, American football and like softball. That was big.
So how did you get into community organizing?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I grew up kind of in the politics of, like, what was happening with immigrants. And, you know, my mom was deeply involved in that. I was in plays about that starting when I was 3 years old.
Mm.
They had a little girl whose mom had gotten taken, who was getting deported. And, like, at 3 years old, I'm just, like, waving my hand, like, bye, mama. That was, like, my role in the play, you know? So, like, that's where I started having an analysis about some of that and what's happening with our community. And just grew up with the social justice mentality and role models, and then became an organizer out of college, just kind of got thrown into the labor movement and tried to figure it out. And I had no idea what I was doing when I started, but my first year, like half a year in, all of a sudden I was organizing housekeepers who clean hotel rooms in Chicago.
Mm.
And they had too much, the workload was too high, and every year they would like add fancy things into the hotel rooms, like coffee pots and like ironing boards. But if you think about that, if they're cleaning 16 rooms, every one coffee pot that they have to clean, that's like 1 minute in one room, that's like 16 extra minutes of work, right?
Right.
And so it's like people have to move fast. And the day that we organized them to say, nope, I'm not going to clean all my rooms, I'm going to only clean this many rooms, and they all cleaned less rooms and walked down at the end of the day together to their boss and said, we're done. We're not going to clean those rooms. And when I saw that transformation that people had, where they had been scared to
mm-hmm.
do this,
yeah,
and then where they collectively felt that power and that were able to like take the reins over their own lives together and be like, nope, that's it, was like a complete, like, from my guts to my heart to my brain changing experience.
It's like a revelation of
It's just like a revelation of what people are capable of and like what it means when I look in people's eyes and saw the fear in them the day before and saw the power in them that day. Was like, it still makes shivers run up and down my spine when I think about that moment. And like, that is what got me. I was like, this is it, this is where I'm at, this is what's up.
Okay.
I'm in for
good.
Yeah.
Now vas a tener que escuchar, que escuchar, ay, ay, ay.
Me dirijo a toda mi gente, la comunidad de mi nación, porque hay algo que mi gente está causando desazón. Por eso es de suma importancia y urgencia solucionarlo, porque así toda mi gente resulta que sola se está destrozando. Los tiempos que estamos pasando son tan duros y malignos, que el alma de toda mi gente se está enfrentando a un abismo difícil de evadir, en tiempo de decidir si la vida que estamos llevando nos empuja a mentir. Por eso sigo, sigo, sigo y ando, ando buscando las soluciones por la vida rascando. Por eso sigo, sigo, sigo y ando, ando buscando las soluciones por la vida rapeando. Por eso
traigo un pensamiento para todos los presentes, rapeando te lo digo de manera diferente. Ajá. Para mi gente, para la que busca día a día, sí, en este laberinto encontrar una salida. Sé que desesperando y la moral se nos daña, nosotros en la miseria y otros tomando champaña. Pero por consiguiente me dispongo yo a decirte que si no empezó la guerra, pues ¿por qué vas a rendirte? Más vale estés atento, ajá, también bien predispuesto, también, ante la falta de reacción, señores, es que yo protesto. No sea tan necio, no busque más pretexto, rimando y ragamufeando, es que yo sigo con esto. Ay, el miedo que persigue nos quiere paralizar, busquemos soluciones pa' que no vaya a pasar, quedarnos vegetando sin por nada reaccionar.
Are now tuned into the Latina Theory.
Do you want to share a little bit more about like what you experienced in college? And I'm asking about this because I think there's a lot of Latinas that feel like they need to focus on one, like a linear career track.
Mm-hmm.
And if they need to figure out immediately, and if they don't, then they're not doing something right. Mm-hmm. And something that I've learned as an organizer is that it's something that you can fall into, or that it just mm-hmm. looks differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you want to share a little bit about your college experience and that kind yeah. of like falling into organizing?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I jumped around a lot. I was like a criminal justice major and wanted to be like a parole officer. And then I wanted to be a social worker. And I was kind of all over the map, but I wanted to like change things from the inside. Right. And like pick a path and go do that. But just like the more I explored, like I did a lot of exploration, taking different kinds of classes to try to understand the world around me, and just came to the realization that I wasn't going to make change inside the system, that I was going to have to organize outside the system if I wanted to do the things in the world that I wanted to do. That said, like I say it now and it sounds like I had a plan, and I didn't have a plan. I would not have articulated it like right. that back then.
Right.
But so I was just like, what should I do? I want to do a social justice job. Like that was the extent of like mm-hmm. my plan. And then someone came in to one of my classes and was like, hey, we're recruiting folks to do this 3-day training for labor organizing with the AFL-CIO. And I was like, well, I guess I'll try that. Like, why not? And so I went and I did it and I got offered a job in that.
Wow.
And so I took it. I was like, well, let's give this a shot. And it, like I said, it wasn't until like half a year to a year in that I was like, oh, this is what's up. But yeah, I was like, I wanted to explore my mind and like explore sort of the way that I actually was going to perceive and analyze the world around me mm-hmm. in a way that I like was new to me in the last couple of years of college. My dad
mm-hmm.
has a PhD, and my dad came to this country to get an education.
Right.
And fought really hard to do that. He had 2 kids and a wife. He was the only one who was legally allowed to work, right, because of the immigration
mm-hmm.
system. And so he's got to go to school full time to keep his visa, but he's the only one that's allowed to work. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. But so he fought hard for his education. And so my dad, when we were kids, like all the little songs, like the little lullabies and whatever, he would change all the words from being like, I want a woman who can cook and clean, to being like, I want a woman who graduated from the university and got a PhD, right? And so, like, that was what he instilled in me. So when I was in college, I was going to grad school no matter what. Like, that was how I was raised. That was what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, like, organizing was kind of a deviation for me. And then I was going to, you know, work for a couple years and then go back to grad school. And I even took the GREs. I got good scores. And then I loved organizing. And so I didn't. And so my dad, you know, constantly was like, so when are you going to go back to
school?
When are you going to, like, maybe become a lawyer or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I realized that, no, that wasn't where I was going to find success.
That wasn't your call.
Yeah. And
I feel like Latinos in general, Latinas specifically, too, because we are the mujeres, it's kind of like, this is your path.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, like, generations after that it's changed, but it really hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure.
There's so much pressure. Like, recently I was working with a few young ladies throughout the state for the Latina Empowerment Conference at Mankato. And there was a young girl who said, I really want to come to school here. I really like it here. And I'm like, well, why don't you? She was a senior. And I said, have you applied? She goes, I've applied, but my father and my mother won't allow me to be this far away from them. And they lived
mm-hmm.
in Richfield. And I'm going, that is not far,
yeah.
and
yeah.
you should be able to do what you want. I'm not trying to bring any, you know, rumble in your familia circle,
right.
but at the end of the day,
yeah.
I see the importance that it is to do the work that you do, you know, that we organize to promote higher education and the independence of
mm-hmm.
that strong Latina woman to say, you know, Ama, you know, Papi, it is what it is,
yeah.
and you'll figure it out, or maybe you won't, but at least you're doing your own mission.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
salute to you for saying this is it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like my dad, my parents are proud of me.
Right.
And like really
mm-hmm.
proud of the work that I'm doing now. But like I was set down that path. Like that was where I was supposed to go and decided that I didn't have to follow that path.
It's like the path led you to your path.
Exactly.
Yeah.
yeah you
exactly.
know, they paved their path and
yep.
it led the way to your own yellow brick road.
mm-hmm.
And I think it just highlights how social change needs to come from all these different tracks.
Yeah.
And that it's, especially with ahorita, with everything that's happening, it's really hard to get a job. And mm-hmm. like, it's not guaranteed that you're going to be okay if you go to grad school.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Like, it's just a very different context.
Mm-hmm.
So I think even on that end, it seems like it pushed you to get even more creative with what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also important.
Princesa pasó por mi lado.
You are now tuned into the Latina Theory.
What does being Latina mean to you?
So it means a very specific thing to me, and I think that it's true of everybody because everyone has a different experience with Latino identity. And like I said, when I was a kid, I grew up around this theater culture about understanding Latino identity and experience in Minnesota. And at a time when there weren't very many other Latinos at all, especially not surrounding me, to me, being Latina meant that I was gonna go to grad school. That's mm-hmm. what we do. We come to this country and they can't take our education away from us, and you're gonna go to grad school. Like, that was, to mm-hmm. me, was part of my identity of what it meant to be Latina. And as I grew up, like, it meant to me also that I had to be a trailblazer because I was the only Latina in, like, my AP classes in high mm-hmm. school.
Yeah.
I was the only Latina in all of these spaces where I was doing, like, things that I was excited about. And so it meant being ready and willing to push through stereotypes or just boundaries or just, like, feeling kind of uncomfortable. Like, that's what it meant to be comfortable in my own Latina skin, was to put myself in those places and, like, set myself up there and be like, I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm. Veronica, what different ways are opportunities people can get involved with CETUL? And if somebody says, I want to get involved, I can't dedicate this much time, but how can I, or where can I?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different things. Like, one is, you know, we have our regular workers meetings for folks that are janitors, for folks that are fast food workers, for folks that generally work low wage jobs that want to fight to change them. Like, we have meetings every 2 weeks with, depending on where you work. So people should definitely call us and we can get people plugged in if they're low wage workers. And if folks are allies where they're not working in low wage jobs, but they want to be a part of this movement,
mm-hmm.
there is also, like, we just hired an ally organizer who's just already been doing phenomenal work in bringing together the community to recognize its stake in these fights, even if you don't work directly at those places, and recognize that, like, this fight actually is going to lift all of us up and all of our kids and the future, our communities up. And they have meetings every 2 weeks on Wednesday nights at 6 at CETUL that people can come and be a part of.
Explain to us where people can find you online. Yep.
So our website is ctul.net, and people can call us at 612-332-0663. And we're on Facebook at CETUL.
And also, I want to encourage folks, you can become members of CETUL by donating. I am a very proud member of CETUL. If you can give 10 a month, that's 100 a year. I spend that often on drinks. I think you can also make different decisions with that money. So I want to highly encourage folks that another way that you can get involved with CETUL is by becoming a member.
So. Veronica Mendez Moore, we want to thank you for being a part of the Latina Theory as our guest. We hope you can join us on January 6th. It's our first Kickstarter fundraiser that we're doing, and celebrating Latinidad, celebrating the Mujer Latina. And you're always welcome here, and please share that there is a spot where Latinas can create dialogue, maybe that they can agree or disagree on, but there is a spot that you can tune into, and that's what Latina Theory is all about. So thank you, Veronica, once again, for being a part of our show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This is Veronica Mendez Moore with CETUL, and you are listening to The Latina Theory.
esencia. Comadre.